Bobby laughed only because it was that or hit something. Misfiled paperwork, incompetent bureaucracies. The public held the police accountable for the rising crime rate. Little did they know they should go after the pencil pushers in the world. All right, he said, pulling it together. So in 78, Aeola rejoins the land of the living. Then what? He disappears. Seriously? Never checks into the halfway house. Never applies for his benefits. Never keeps his follow-up appointment. One day he exists, the next he's gone. Flew the coop or disappeared into the black hole of the homeless shelters? Your guess is as good as mine. I'm thinking, given his reported level of intelligence, that he assimilated into society under an assumed identity. Think about it. He came from a life of privilege. What rich kid is going to settle for hanging out on the streets? Plus, even in the homeless circuit, people get known. They attend the same soup kitchens, sleep at the same shelters, hang out at the same street corner day after day. Sooner or later, someone like Charlie Marvin, someone who works with both the mentally ill and the homeless, would be bound to recognize him. No one really disappears anymore, not even in the mean streets of Boston. Yes and no. Last I heard, officials listed the city's homeless at 6,000. Given that, even a large shelter such as the Pine Street Inn serves only about 700. There's a lot of people whose faces aren't being seen. Yeah, but you're talking about someone who's managed to fly under the radar for almost 30 years. That's a long time to be invisible, which also raises the possibility that Aeola's simply dead. Dee Dee pursed her lips, mulled it over. We'd never be so lucky. The true sickos always live forever. Have you noticed that, or is it just me? I've noticed that too, Bobby frowned. Has Sinkus managed to locate Aeola's family? Paid them a visit yesterday afternoon, at their Back Bay residence, she added meaningfully. They wouldn't even let him in the door. That's how excited they were to hear about long-lost Christopher. Have you ever noticed that the richest families are always the most fucked up? Or is that just me? I've noticed that too. See, there are some advantages of our pitiful wages. We'll never be rich enough for our families to be that fucked up. Exactly. Wonder of wonders, the Aeolas have already lawyered up. They're not answering questions about their son without a subpoena in hand and their lawyer in the room. So, Sinkus is pushing the paperwork through now. I bet you a buck he'll have the fine folks and their overpaid suit in our offices this afternoon. Couple cups of burnt coffee and they should start talking, if only to preserve their taste buds. She paused. I'm guessing they don't know where Aeola is. Sinkus said it was clear they had nothing but distaste for their son. I'd like to learn a lot more about the incident that got him sent to Boston State Mental, though. Would be good to develop a more robust profile on Mr. Aeola. See how his childhood M.O. matches up with other things we know. Dee Dee nodded to herself, already flipping through her stack of files, cheeks flushed, energy crackling. Nothing like two viable suspects to make the sergeant as giddy as a schoolgirl. So, she asked briskly, how'd it go with Catherine? Bobby recapped the highlights. Catherine claims to have spoken with Russell Granger twice. He introduced himself as Special Agent FBI, no name, and his questions were consistent with what the other officers were asking her. Most interesting tidbit, he brought a pencil sketch of her alleged attacker. Really? Dee Dee's eyes widened. According to Catherine, the sketch didn't match Richard Umbrio. Granger's drawing showed a much smaller man. When she tried to tell Granger that, he argued with her.